Welcome to The Partial Historians.
We explore all the details of ancient Rome.
Everything from the political scandals, the love affairs, the battles waged, and when citizens turn against each other. I'm Dr. Rad.
And I'm Dr. G. We consider Rome as the Romans saw it, by reading different authors from the ancient past and comparing their stories.
Join us as we trace the journey of Rome from the founding of the city. Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of The Partial Historians. I'm Dr. Rad, and this intelligent, ravishing creature next to me...
It's Dr. G! Yay! I feel very complimented. Is it my sequined dinosaur t-shirt?
I mean, if that doesn't scream intelligent and ravishing, I don't know what does.
Oh, you're so kind.
So I'm thrilled to be back again in the studio talking about ancient Rome with you.
Yeah, we've been exploring ancient Rome from the foundation of the city, and we are well into what is the early Republic at this point. It's around about 425.
It is.
BCE.
I feel like we've really raced ahead suddenly. Like for a while, it was just like moving through slow setting cement. Like we just didn't feel like we could get out of the middle of the 5th century BCE. And then here we are. We're getting so close to a new century.
Things are speeding up. Yeah. And I think we have to thank our missing source material.
I was going to say, probably not a good thing. It's the fact that everything seems to be a little bit blanker somehow.
There are a lot of fragments. But before we get into 425 and maybe what we could possibly know about it, let's do a little bit of a recap of where we're up to. And just think a little bit about 426 and where the land lay at that point.
Well, it's a difficult one because to give a recap of 426, Dr. G, is but to give a recap of a 437 as well.
It's a tough time in our Roman source material. And it centers around this guy, Aulus Cornelius Cossus, who is most famous in all of Roman history for being one of the three Roman generals to achieve taking the Spolia Opima.
I feel like that should have been a sign to them that they were maybe making it too hard.
All of Rome, only three men. Well, maybe, but it's really challenging because it has to be somebody who is in the military, in a significant position, taking down the enemy leader directly.
I know.
So it's a commander taking out a commander, basically in single combat, in amongst a whole other battle going on around them.
And it makes it even more difficult because technically he may not be that person because he doesn't seem to have been a commander potentially when he did this.
Awkward. Yeah. Like 426 is one of the years. He also could have done it in 428 when he was actual consul. Mm-hmm. That would make narrative sense to me.
Yeah.
And that's the date I would hone in on. But it could also have been as early as you say, 437, 438 as well.
Yeah.
So everything's a little bit hazy.
But the bigger context for who Aulus Cornelius Cossus was fighting is Vey.
Yes.
Yeah.
He's fighting the Etruscans.
Yeah.
And Rome at this point in time, the big picture is that Rome is sort of finding its way with its neighbours. Like, how does it sit within the broader Italian landscape? Where do their strengths lie? Who are their allies? Who are they against? And they're now butting up really closely against the Etruscans. And the city of Vey is the southernmost Etruscan city we know of, and it is a mere 15 to 20 kilometres from Rome itself. And, you know, a good day's march, hard and fast, and you'll get there and you'll be ready to fight them by the next breakfast.
Absolutely. And it also, that conflict with Vey seems to be pivoting on the question of Fidenae, I think, in whatever year you're talking about. But in this past decade, it seems to be a real sore spot that this colony of Fidenae really wants to be sided with the Etruscans. And every time they decide they're going to make the switch to Rome, conflict ensues.
Yeah, it's a tragic time. Rome is convinced that Fidenae is theirs.
Yep.
And Fidenae is apparently a Roman colony from way back, depending on how you look at it. And Fidenae has defected. Mm-hmm. They've thrown their lot in with the Etruscans.
Yep.
And Rome is less than pleased.
Absolutely, they're not going to take that. So as a result, we had a lot of military action in 426 BCE, rightly or wrongly. This is how it's come across to us. With the Romans, after having a difficult start, pulling through. Yeah.
Woo.
Yeah. Yay for imperialism.
Woo.
Yeah. So that's kind of where we... Sarcasm may not be detected. So that's kind of where I think we ended up at the end of 426, which is actually refreshing because the early 420s BCE were a little dull, I'm not going to lie.
They were. But as 426 concludes, it feels like we've maybe reached the conclusion of a certain level of the combat.
Yeah.
Because if the king of Vey,
yes,
Lars Tolumnius,
yeah,
has not died up until now, we think he must be dead by this point in time.
Sure. Yeah, definitely, yeah.
So that brings us to...
His extended deadline is... Sorry. That brings us to...
425 BCE. For 425 BCE.
Oh, yeah. Guess very what? Exciting, yeah.
Dionysus of Halicarnassus is missing.
Oh, party on. Liffy is not.
The Fasti Capitolini are missing.
Oh, really? Wow.
They are. They've been missing for a little while now. And they
well, were... you kept that quiet.
I mean, there was no point to mention them. So this year I have 4 military tribunes with consular power.
Now... I would love for you to tell me their names, Dr. G. But before you do that, I would like to pause because I was talking with a learned gentleman the other day who asked me to explain where the title of tribune actually comes from.
It's a good question because it does have tri in it. So a group of 3. But we can already see with the plebeian tribunes that maybe it depends.
Sure. And I think it also has this link to the fact that Rome, I mean, at least according to their own history, Rome was organized into tribes. And so tribune was often a title given to someone who was the leader of some sort of group that had something to do with the tribal organization. And if we think about what you were saying in terms of the number and that idea of where does the word tribune comes from, Romulus originally divided the population of Rome up into 3 tribes, correct?
Yes, correct.
Mm.
Yes.
And so this is a title that a lot of people get in some format or another. So, for example, obviously we've got the Tribune of the Plebs. Now, we don't think that the Tribune of the Plebs have a particularly strong connection to the tribal structure.
To the ancient tribes.
Yeah, no, we don't think so. But it makes sense, obviously, that they are presiding over a body where people are organized. It is a tribal assembly, essentially, that they're presiding over as well. So there's a connection there. It's also just, to say, a word that the Romans start to use for these people who are leading some sort of tribal group. And I'd say it's also something that, therefore, the more they get into the habit of using that for these people, the more that the practice of using that term, obviously, you know, continues on. And then, obviously, when we've got military tribunes refer to leaders, obviously, of a particular army group. Again, probably very early on in Rome's history, there was probably some sort of tribal organization to the group that they were commanding, but eventually it doesn't have anything to do with that, but the title stays.
Yes. Mm. Yeah. The meaning changes, but the word remains.
The word lives on. And so obviously military tribunes with consular power is, you know, apparently the Romans putting this idea of, well, plebeians, they don't have the auspicium to be... You know, they can't be a consul like the patricians can. We have the auspicium. We are, you know, monopolizing all the auspicium that's out there. So you can't hold that position. And therefore, they've used this position, this military tribunes, and given it the authority or the power of the consul without giving it the actual consulship. So, yeah.
It's a very fine line, isn't it?
So complicated to try and explain.
And yet, for all of the explanations that are put forward for the idea that these military tribunes with consular power should open up the position to people who aren't necessarily patrician, what we tend to find is that they're largely patrician.
Yes. And see, I was reading this really interesting article the other day, which puts forward this argument that at this point in Rome's history, this idea of consuls, praetors, military tribunes with consular power, it's all just a lie. Liza Minnelli lies. Because this person was saying that it seems as though Rome obviously is, as we've been talking about, it's much the stuff that we've been talking about, I suppose, but taking it a little bit further, that Rome has this narrative that they got rid of the kings and then they seamlessly transitioned into this republican system, which is suspiciously similar to the late republic.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that in this particular context, in early Rome, this person has suggested that actually there are no senior magistrates. So consuls, praetors, military tribunes with consular power, it doesn't exist at this point in time. It's something that exists a bit later, probably about, if we're at 425 right now, probably, what, about 80 years. That's when we start to see the appearance of these sorts of things. And that really we've just got patricians, which is much what we've seen, monopolizing power. So because they are wealthy, they have resources, they have clients, they've been able to monopolize power in the countryside. And if we look at the names that the tribes have been given out in the countryside, like outside of the pomerium, outside of the city of Rome itself, they kind of reflect the power that these people hold. So like they might be named after a particular gentes, so like Aemilia or whatever. And then if we look at the tribes within the city, that's not the case. It's the tribal names are more reflective of like where you live. You know, it's like the Palatina or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, look, I think it's pretty fair to take the position that the way that state structures form is slow and it's a process and things are not necessarily set in structures that make sense and structures have to alter and change and adapt to situations. And part of the challenge for historians is that there is very few ways for us to get closer to what actually may have happened in the past than we already are.
Yeah,
and,
for sure.
And so these written sources that we're relying on, whether it's the Fasti, whether it's Dionysius or Livy, these people are doing the best they can. I like to give them the benefit of the doubt. They can with the information that they have at hand.
Mm.
But the way that information is kept and conveyed over time is problematic.
Yeah.
And it's not rigorous in the same way. Like we live in this internet age where we have an overabundance, if you like, of information.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that it's easy to access the information that is actually useful and good and true.
Yeah.
And we know that truth is a multiplicity, depending on your subjectivity. So if we take all of those ideas that we understand into account, the complexity of what's at play here is far beyond what we're going to be able to discern from the source material.
Yeah.
And there's lots of things that we don't know. So the best that we can say in this sort of case is that, yes, you know, something like the name Tribune has a couple of different sort of etymological connections that it could draw upon to make it make sense.
Mm.
But at the same time, it's clearly in use. And when language is in use, meanings change and adapt to the necessity of the moment.
Absolutely.
Not holding true to the etymology of how it originally came about.
Yeah, and I think this is the thing. I like to say Liza Minnelli lies, but I don't think that, as you say, that they're totally making this up. It doesn't mean that these people that we're talking about didn't exist. It doesn't mean that the actions they took weren't taken, that events didn't happen and that sort of thing. I think it's kind of more the titles that people held and that sort of thing, or the idea that maybe that the state was quite so formalized, which is something that we have been talking about for a really long time in this early Republican period. And I must admit, I was kind of convinced by the idea that when you look at the, even in the periods where we're a bit more convinced of the fact that like the consulship or the praetorship or whatever the title was given did exist, the kinds of things that those people would do are military. This idea that you might have a division of power between civilian and military positions. And therefore, these people that we're talking about, like, there's no doubt that there were people out there wielding military power. Definitely the patricians held that.
I mean, it seems likely.
It seems very likely. I mean, that makes total sense. And therefore, this idea that, you know, that these guys are the ones commanding the armies makes 100% sense. It's the question, I suppose, is, do they actually hold this formalized position? And are they quite as dominant inside the city as the sources sometimes make it sound? Because what this article was arguing was more the fact that it was probably more like minor officials who are doing the sort of day-to-day governance kind of stuff. So the people who are, you know, like the neighborhood leaders. I think they're called like the, I think it's like the Curio Maximus or something like
that. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I love a good Curio Maximus.
Yeah. So like neighborhood leaders and people who hold slightly more localized positions who are keeping things running on the inside of the city. Because, of course, Rome does have this really interesting ban on military power inside the Pomerium. You know, the fact that the military assemblies, that generals, that soldiers, they all have to stay outside of the Pomerium. It means that whilst the patricians might be able to throw their weight around in terms of military matters, they need a different outlet for that inside the city. And that comes back to what we've talked about before in terms of them potentially dominating the priesthood and therefore being able to keep control over things like law and judicial matters through their kind of jealous guarding of the knowledge around how things actually work around. So a lot of the stuff that we've said makes sense. It's just maybe you take away the sort of official titles.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
We got no guarantees on titles around
here. Yeah, exactly. But I just thought that was interesting because it's so hit the mark with so many of the things that we've been talking about in terms of the fact that like these ideas and these structures probably come in later, but you can still see the events happening and, you know, the patricians and the plebeians potentially having issues of tension around who has power and the tribune of the plebs coming out of that in terms of being able to provide protection, particularly the tribune of the plebs being connected to the city of Rome where the patricians don't have that military power. It was just really interesting to sort of see that all coming together in one article, which I was like, yeah, this makes sense to me.
look, and I think this sort of thing is really important because we're not sure how the Roman state really develops. So it's like, you know, they tell this history about themselves.
Yeah.
And that's fine. And we're going through it and sort of, you know, delving into it as we go along. But we're not sure about consuls at this point in time.
Mm.
We're not sure about tribunes at this point in time. We're not sure about the social division between the patricians and the plebeians as even being a plausible thing at this time.
Yeah.
And so we're dealing with a murky history of Rome where later Romans are trying to interpret and understand themselves by sort of like retrojecting, like what would be the previous steps?
Yeah.
What would make sense for this thing to exist now? And they see it as a gradual sort of process, but It's open to interpretation.
I think the base story 100% makes sense, which is you've got a powerful aristocracy, which is able to assert itself and remain dominant for some time once you no longer have a king.
Yeah.
Because there's no one keeping them in check anymore. And then you have the people reacting against abuses of power and corruption. And that's where you get the birth of something like the Tribune of the Plebs. And luckily for them, the Tribunes of the Plebs, well, not luckily, I mean, it's not a coincidence, but with the development of the Tribunes of the Plebs, developing that power of, or that oath being taken to protect them physically, you know, so making them inviolate, it offers them a level of protection, particularly because they are based in the city. that
you might not be able to have a sword in the city, but nobody can stop you getting beaten up unless we say so.
Yeah, exactly. But that idea of there being that protection and the fact that the Romans, who are the elite, they can't just bring their soldiers in and kill these guys. I mean, if you think about, this article made the point.
That's really annoying because I want this guy gone.
Exactly. Well, they were making the point of like, how easily did they get rid of Spurius Maelius?
Well, pretty easily.
Pretty easily. But he wasn't a tribune.
But I think they broke the state to do it.
Well, sure. But like at the end of the day, they got rid of him pretty easily and he wasn't a tribune. He was just like a guy that was making trouble for them. Why wouldn't they do that with the tribunes unless they are respecting this?
Yeah, but we also don't know when a tribune becomes inviolable.
I know.
And we also don't really know when the pomerium becomes the be-all and end-all of entering or not with a sword.
No, but it just made sense to me in the sense of like the fact that there are more tribunes, it seems, than there are, say, consuls. Like if we're going by the official two consuls.
And I think part of this, and we will get onto those military tribunes, I'm not going to leave you hanging.
Yes. Pause for the longest digression known to man. Hi, Herodotus.
Hello. We'll come back to those guys in a sec. But the thing with the military tribunes, with consular power, is that it is clear that even from the long distance of looking back over the 300, 400 years of history, that people in the late Republic understood Rome as not being an all-powerful entity right off the bat.
For sure.
It is a city of struggle.
Yeah.
And it is not just a struggle which results in having to exile kings and getting rid of the whole idea altogether. It's a struggle to build a workable idea of how a state looks if it's not run by one person.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're really struggling to figure out how to do it. And they're being pressed at this point in time from all sides.
Yeah.
Everybody around them wants nothing to do with them.
Yeah.
It is a constant jostling. And it seems like every city, state, essentially, because you could think of them as sort of isolated states, that they're all struggling for their and jostling for their position in central Italy right now. And Rome is just another city trying to do its best.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that's what I mean. This kind of made sense to me.
Mm.
And also, also the idea that Rome will continue to be struggling to assert itself for quite some time. And the idea that consuls...
Foreshadowing.
The idea that consuls and praetors don't really develop a strong connection to civil administration and civil governance until quite some time later, because they're still dealing with all this military stuff. Like, that's still their main point of existence and still their...
Yeah, you got to have that imperium. You know what I'm saying? You got to have it.
Yeah, exactly. And I was like, yeah, you know what? That is true. And the fact that tribunes of the plebs obviously become, so powerful, but again, over time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very much over time. And we see them struggling here. All right.
Digression done. Thank you for indulging me.
Oh, it was a pleasure. It's always, always interesting. So, military tribunes with consular power, it's 425 BCE.
Yep.
Who have we got riding that wagon? Well, Aulus Sempronius Atratinus.
A name I've heard before.
Yes, you might remember him as being part of the Suffolk consulship in 428. Lucius Quintius Cincinnatus.
Another name I'm very familiar, but not the guy that you're thinking of.
Also Suffolk consul in 428.
Yeah.
Lucius Furius Medullinus.
Mm.
Military tribune with consular power in 432. And Lucius Horatius Barbatus. Nobody's ever heard of him before.
But we have heard the name Horatius
We have. Yeah. But it's interesting to me that we've got three out of our four military tribunes people who have either previously held the consulship or the military tribunate with consular power.
Yep.
Previously.
True.
So,
true.
Which makes me think Rome is in dire straits this year because they've only picked really experienced dudes to come back into the situation.
Interesting take on it. Interesting.
Yeah, except for Barbatus, the beady one, who, might be somebody's protege.
Okay, well, get ready to be blown away, Dr. G, by what I'm about to tell you based on Livy's account.
Oh, yeah.
Are you ready for it?
I am.
Can you handle it?
I don't know.
Okay. All right, well, let's see. All right, so 425, Livy tells me that they was granted a truce that was supposed to last for 20 years, and the Aquians were granted a truce of 3 years. Now, they had wanted more, but that is all they were going to get from Rome. And that's it.
That's it.
That's it. Explicitly, he says, there were no foreign problems and no domestic problems. That is it.
Wow. All of that experience in the military tribunate. And for what?
Well, this is why I was curious, by your take on it. I was like,
Just you wait.
Yeah. Do they need all this experience? I don't know that they do.
I mean, maybe. I mean, I understand that, you know, the war with Fidene has been concluded because, you know, they shoved a whole bunch of the troublemakers into Ostia, repopulated Fidene with some Romans and be like, you two behave yourselves now.
Yeah.
And
then there was slaughter. So much slaughter.
But I didn't realize that the situation with Vey was coming about. So I did a bit of a timeline, a recap.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because I've got nothing to talk about. I have no source material.
Go for it.
I mean, I've got Dinodorus Siculus, who, you know, questionable at
you
best.
You may as well have no sources.
I like that man, but he's very focused on the Peloponnesian War. But to just do a bit of a backstory on Fidene and what's been going on. In 438, Fidene defects from Rome.
Mm-hmm.
That is the crucial moment. And apparently this is on the advice of the king of Vey, Lars Tonomnius. He's like, wow, you know, I saw this situation and I think you should defect. And it's at that point that Fidene follows what appears to be Etruscan advice and slaughters the Roman ambassadors.
Yeah, yeah. Who could forget?
Who could forget?
The headless men.
The statue still stands.
Yeah.
when Dionysius and Livy are riding.
Yeah.
437, there is war.
Mm-hmm.
War begins. Rome is not having anything to do with this. And depending on which source you read and where you are in the timeline, this is exactly when Cossus kills Lars Tolomius and deals with that situation.
Excellent.
We think that might be not true. 435, we have the dictator, Quintus Servilius, who captures Fidene by tunneling under the citadel.
Yep.
Thrilling stuff.
I did like that. That was strategy, you know. That was real strategy.
1 year, one tunnel later. And it doesn't last, though. So in 434, we've got Mamercus Aemilius appointed dictator because of the threat from Vey.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, you know, the tension between the Fidene and the Vey situation. It's all connected.
It fizzles out, right?
It is a bit of a fizzer.
Yeah, yeah.
428, Cornelius Cossus, consul.
Yep.
The Vey people are raiding Roman territory. I mean, they've got lots of ways of saying
it. No, it just sounds funny. It just sounds funny.
The people of Vey.
Yeah.
And Rome dispatches a triumviral commission to investigate Fidene's participation in the raids by Vey.
Yep. That's a law and order. Yeah.
427.
Yeah.
Rome sends out the Fediales to demand redress from Vey.
Ah, who could forget?
And then declares war because they do not get redressed.
Jupiter is my witness.
426. Cossus and three other military tribunes. Mamercus Aemilius, dictator for the third time. Cossus is master of the horse. It's all happening. They defeat Fidene and Vey.
Yeah.
So that's like the previous year.
And now it ends with a truce.
And now it's truce time?
A really long truce. 20 years.
Well, I mean, at least a 10 and a bit.
No. The truce is 20 years.
Oh, that's much longer than the conflict.
That's what I mean. I mean,
we'll see if it lasts.
Yeah, you'd hope.
So apparently there's three surviving monuments in Rome to this conflict with Fidene. So we do think it has some historical basis.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, yeah.
Beyond, you know.
The question is, did it last over this length of time or is it something that just happened at one of these points in time and the Romans are confused?
I think it would make sense for it to be a prolonged conflict.
But this length? Or in this order?
I don't know if Rome is a capable military force right now. I mean, they want to be, but, you know, sometimes it doesn't work out.
They think they are. That's why they get so annoyed when they don't do well, like last episode.
So there's the statue commemorating the four Roman ambassadors who...
Possibly headless, not sure.
We'd have to find the statue and then be like, oh no, that headlessness is a deliberate artistic choice. We've got the Spolia Opima won by Cossus, which is attested in the time of Augustus. He says he's
by
seen
Augustus
it.
By Augustus himself.
He says he's seen it. So we wouldn't want to disbelieve Augustus because the risk of death is high.
God knows he never lies.
Don't be like that about my favorite knight. And there is a golden crown that is also apparently dedicated in the Capitoline Temple.
Well, that's right, because the dictator was made to dedicate it, apparently, in 437.
Mm. Yeah. So all of these physical objects that attest to the history.
I have no doubt there was conflict with Vey. But it's just a question of, like, as I say, like, did it all happen when they're saying, how they're saying?
Yeah, well, I mean, who can say? But like, that's all I've got for this year.
Fair enough. All right, let me take you on to 424 then.
Hello to listeners of The Partial Historians, and thank you to The Partial Historians. My name's Neil, and I'm the host, creator, and pretty much everything of the Ancient History Hound podcast. I'm all about ancient history, and this includes ancient Greece, Rome, and other cultures from antiquity. I cover a wide range of topics. I'm sure there's something for you, but why not find out for yourself? Ancient History Hound is probably on the platform you're using right now. So come and find me and have a scroll through the episodes. I reckon there's something there for you, and it'd be great to have you join me.
In 424, we once again have military tribunes with consular power. So who have we got, Dr. G?
We have Appius Claudius Crassus. Yes, Appius Claudius returns. This is the son of the infamous Decemvir.
Yeah.
This family does not know when to quit.
I knew it wasn't the Decemvir.
No, he's done
it. He died in shady circumstances.
But his son was allowed to survive, and thus the line of Claudii is perpetuated.
Look, I'll only be okay with that because eventually it'll give me my favourite topic to study, the Julio Claudius.
Tiberius.
Hey, there's a lot more to the Claudians than just Tiberius Livia. Huh?
Well,
she marries into it, but whatever. Like
Spurius Nautius Rutilus, a patrician.
Yep.
Lucius Sergius Fidenas.
Ah, the hero of Fidenae.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Previously consul in 437.
Yep.
And 429.
Mm-hmm.
Military tribune with consular power in 433.
Mm.
Fancy.
Yep.
All right. And Sextus Julius Ullus.
Still think that name should not be allowed to exist. Just sounds all shades of wrong.
Ullus.
Yeah. No, just like the Julius Ullus. It's just...
Yeah, it doesn't to be honest, flow off the tongue.
It sounds like I'm making fun of him, and I'm not.
It's his name.
Yeah. All right. Well, you'll be relieved to hear I do have a little bit more detail from Livy in this year.
Oh, yeah. That's exciting. So, I mean, Dionysius is predictably... missing.
Okay, yeah.
I was prepared
for it that time.
As is the Fasti Capitolini. I have some Diodorus Siculus.
Okay. Do you want to tell me what it is? I'll tell you what's wrong.
Well, there seems to be some question mark over the praenomen of Appius Claudius. Is it Appius or is it Titus? Diodorus says Titus, and as we know, Diodorus is often wrong.
Look, if I know anything about the Romans, is that they are very unimaginative with their names.
This is true. So, yeah. I mean, Titus is a possibility.
Sure.
It sits within the remit of, like, well-known Roman praenomens. But Appius Claudius makes sense as if he's the eldest son of Appius Claudius, the Decemvir.
Exactly.
Because you always just call your kid your name and hope for the best.
And if we know anything about Appius Claudius the Decemvir, it's that he is an egomaniac. So I think he would have called it.
Maybe all of his sons are called Appius Claudius.
I wouldn't put it past him, Dr. Jane. He'll do
Appius Claudius Secondo.
Yeah, like I think it makes sense that the name would be Appius. Mm. Yeah.
And that's pretty much it. Diodorus Siculus does an all right job on on a couple of other names.
Okay.
Right. And also gets another one slightly wrong. So.
Okay.
Doesn't really merit going into, I don't think.
All right. Okay. Well, 424 begins with Livy telling me that once again, there are no issues within the city of Rome and no wars to be fought outside of the city, which makes me wonder, Dr. G, is Rome losing its edge?
Or is Dionysius not writing about things? He's not missing. It's just that nothing happens, so he doesn't say anything.
You know what? That's actually a very intelligent suggestion.
Wait a minute. I have a new topic you I can do. Write about.
You do. All right. So the only thing that's really happening is a nice thing. It just goes to show how little this happens. I feel really uncomfortable talking about this because it's just so rare that we record something nice. Recording only the bad stuff since the BCEs.
I'm really intrigued. What nice thing has been recorded?
There are some games happening, Dr. G.
Oh, well, they're not very nice once you delve into them. I mean,
for the rumors, they're nice.
I mean, yeah, but it's like killing animals.
Look, it's watching, not my cup of tea.
Watching but... people die.
Okay. Look, at this point in time, gladiators are not a thing. I don't think.
No. But what kind of games are they playing?
Well, he hasn't given me an itemized list. There's no Ferris wheels. That's what you want.
Oh, come on, Libby. Come on.
Yeah. So basically,
a boat show on the Tiber.
It's a fulfillment of a promise, Dr. G. Mm-hmm. There had previously been games vowed during the war, and the military tribunes are just fulfilling that promise. Mm. So lots of neighboring people from the area are included.
Okay.
They've gotten over the whole, you know, Sabine abduction thing, apparently.
Right. Yep. It sounds to me like it's going to have some chariot racing. That would make sense.
I would say so, yeah. And look, the Romans are determined to go all out. They want to be the hosts with the most.
They said that last time, and we all saw what happened to the Sabine women.
Ah, but this time they really mean it. They're really laying it on thick. They want to be the most courteous game givers in the whole of their little limited area.
Everybody come.
Yeah, now... I'm going to say the T word. It's time to talk about some tribunes.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, that's right. So, plebeian tribunes, they decide, games, perfect time to cause trouble.
Something does happen in this year.
Well, yeah, no, he said it starts out that way, which makes sense because it's continuation from the previous year, which was really boring.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay, yeah. All right, I'll strap myself back in again.
Yeah, and maybe the tribunes are also thinking the same thing I am, which is that Rome is losing its edge. We've got to like shake things up a little bit. We've got to cause some chaos.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, all right, so they start making some speeches, which are clearly designed to rile people up. Okay, they're saying they're really angry with the people of Rome because it seems like they adore the men that the tribunes of the plebs themselves despise. And I presume that they're meaning the patricians.
Yeah. It would make sense.
Yes.
I hate those guys.
Exactly. And they're like, people are not rising up against these aristocrats.
But I love a good chariot race. Can't I do this revolution later?
No, we can't.
Damn.
Shut up, Timmy. Yeah, so they're basically saying, why aren't you guys seizing opportunities? You aren't running for military tribune with consular power. What is going on? Like, you're allowed to. What? What? They're losing their mind.
It looks like a tough job, you know? I've got this family to feed and this farm situation over here. I can't spend a year away from the harvest. Mm. You know, it's going to be... No, man, no.
So the tribunes point out that, look, if this is the way that you're going to behave, then you have no right to complain anymore that people aren't working hard on your behalf to try and make your lives a little bit better.
That's it. We got to get together and protest. I definitely want to keep complaining.
Yeah. They're like, look, it's not like being Tribune of the Plebs is a great gig, you ungrateful plebeians. It's freaking hard work and it's super dangerous. And for what? What am I doing this for? There's no reward for being Tribune of the Plebs. All we get is patricians hating us and targeting us. And that's hardly a reward if you guys aren't even going to use the rights that we have worked so hard to procure for you.
Wow. I mean, it does sound like Livy is making the tribunate sound like a pretty lame place to be.
Exactly. And this is where the article I was talking about comes in again, because it points out that if we actually think that maybe there were no official senior magistracies like consul or praetor or military tribune with consular power, then potentially Tribune of the Plebs was actually a relatively influential position. But as you have highlighted, we don't really know when it existed either. But it's certainly different to the other magistracies which will develop, in that they have very clear guidelines about this is the power that you have to achieve these goals.
Yeah.
And that's your area. Tribune of the Plebs is very much more flexible, and it really is about the fact that the people seem to have originally taken this oath that they are going to protect.
Yeah, we want you. Some representation.
Yeah.
And it's really shaped by the people in the role.
Yes.
So really, if these Tribune of the Plebs are a little bit upset about how that is going for them, I suggest they do something.
Well, and this is the thing. This is potentially how the Tribune of the Plebs becomes more powerful, because the more that they have, the more that they can sort of play fast and loose with the fact that they can't be killed, technically. I mean, like they can, obviously, but
I am immortal.
Yeah.
I'm going to live. I'm invincible.
I'm gonna live forever. Yeah. No. Technically, obviously, unless somebody wants to get themselves into a whole lot of trouble, they can't be killed. And they only hang out in the city, so yeah. Protection stands. Force field, activate. Pomerium is up.
I don't want to get into a religious doo-doo, so no. I'm going to let you live.
Yeah. So the more that they can exploit that, the more that they can push their position into interesting developments, which might explain why they eventually get veto power. And not just veto power over, like, each other, but, like, veto power. I do love this, actually. This is not for much later, but I just have to say it now. I'll say it again later. I did not realize that when tribunes were first allowed to attend Senate meetings so that they could use their veto power, they initially weren't allowed to actually be in the room. They had to sit outside and shout, veto!
Yeah, a bit like those moments where, like, you have Agrippina behind a curtain.
Yeah.
Being like, I'm listening.
But it's even more hilarious that they're actually, like, everyone knows they're there.
Yeah, yeah. The people are expecting them to stand outside and yell in, veto!
Yeah. No, we're not going to do that.
Stop that!
Yeah, stop that right now. Yeah. So, anyway, that was another tangent. But it is interesting to think about the fact that potentially these people are, you know, wielding some influence. It's just like that classic thing that they've set up here of these senior magistrates who are apparently so important for legislation and that kind of stuff. And they're like, are they? Are they the people doing this? I don't know. But anyway. Anywho. So they say, look, guys, it is time. It is time to see how the state will fare if a plebeian actually holds a magistracy, for God's sake. Like, the patricians told us when we pushed for this that no, you can't do it. You don't have the auspicium to carry out all the duties that come with the role. And even though we fought for you to have exactly such a role, you're not taking it up. And therefore, it kind of seems like maybe plebeians can't do it. So we have to end it and end it now. We must have a plebeian. Is it going to take a freaking miracle to find a plebeian who can hold military tribune with consular power? I think not. We need someone with courage and energy who's going to revitalize the institution.
That's very Churchillian of you. But I don't know that they're going to get their wish in this year in particular, or next year for that matter. In fact, I don't think they're going to achieve this for years.
Well, I kind of like the way that Livy says that finally, after like a decade or two of being relentlessly nagged by the tribunes of the plebs, apparently it's only now that the plebeians really start to register that, I guess we could. Yeah.
I see what you're saying. Now, so what you meant back then was that I could go for the role.
Yeah.
That's what you were saying. Oh, when you first said that's not how I heard it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. But to be fair, what he says is that basically when they first got the option to run for military tribune with consular power, they felt okay about it because plebeians have obviously shown over the years that they're capable of leading, usually in a military sense. So we've had some standout plebeian soldiers, commanders, that sort of thing. Well, sorry, take that back. Not commanders. We've had some outstanding soldiers.
We have Dentatus.
True, exactly.
What a man.
Who could forget? Yeah. So we've had those sorts of people. So clearly they can do that. We've also had many plebeians who are honourable, who are courageous people. those sorts of people did try and run for office when it was first a possibility. But they were bullied, Dr. G.
By
they
who?
Were bullied so hard by the patricians that they gave up and they'd rather be embarrassed and not run for office than try at all. So there.
Wow, that is not the Roman spirit.
It really isn't. It actually sounds extremely high school to me.
It does.
Yeah, that you're gonna let these bullies push you around and tell you what you can and cannot do.
But also,
I think Tina Fey would have something to say about that.
Are you gonna just give up at the first hurdle? Of course the patricians hate you. They've always hated you. That's why they're patricians.
Well, look, the tribunes of the plebs are so fed up with this situation that they're like, you know what? Maybe we should even remove the option to be a military tribune with consular
power. Winding back.
Hear me out. Because it would be better to not actually have the option that's like not being used than have it and no one go for it, because that's just embarrassing.
Excuse me?
Yeah.
What if somebody wants to go for it? Just like,
look, it's making them all look bad.
It's not. It's just, you know, it's only embarrassing because they've decided they're embarrassed about it. I need to go back in time and have a stern chat with these people.
Look, the tribunes are feeling pretty bad about it. So I think you just have to go with their feelings, Dr. G. You know, this is how they're feeling about it. Aww. Luckily, though, the plebeians say, you know what? Yes, we will run for office. We absolutely will take you up on that offer. And they promise all the standard things that any plebeian citizen could ever want. And that is placing a tax on landowners.
Nice.
Yep. And using that money to pay for soldiers.
Nice.
Yep. Because, of course, who's mostly the rank and file?
The plebeians. Yeah,
exactly.
It'd be nice if we didn't have to pay for our own kit every time.
Yeah. And then there also seems to be that age-old issue, Dr. G, of land and land allotment.
Ah, redistribution of the property.
Yep, exactly. So I think it will shock nobody for me to say that these policies sound extremely Gracken in nature and therefore late Republican. However, that's not to say that they're not also fair for the early Republic. Just, you know, it's a little suspicious.
The land is pretty important. I think land is capital.
Yeah.
And so you could do a Marxist reading of this as well. Owning the land and redistributing the land is seizing the means of production.
Yeah.
Because that's how you grow the grain in the first place.
Sure, yeah.
That you need to do anything.
Yeah. This is true. Yeah, so look, maybe that is what they went for, but they're at least giving it a go, whether their policies are stolen from a later century or not.
I see. And is this the year?
This is it, yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. Well, I really have nothing to add in terms of the narrative because, I mean, one, you've done a great job of conveying the narrative to me.
Thank you.
It is clear that, you know, there are some tensions that are being very much retrojected at this point into this period, and fair enough.
Mm-hmm.
And because I lack so much source material, what I did instead was I was like, well, where does Rome really sit in this moment of time? Because it's been a republic for, you know, a wee while now.
It has, yeah.
And
we're coming up to 100 years.
Yeah, we're nearly there. It's always time to celebrate and have a bit of a birthday.
Exactly.
And one of the things that has come up with this conflict with Vey and Fidenae is that Rome does have some colonies. So there's like little outposts here and there that are considered to be Roman. And we've come across this before.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen it with Ardea as well, in particular. And so I went through and, you know, Cornell was great, provided me a list of the places that Rome is said to have colonized early on.
Mm-hmm.
So Fidenae quite early, a place called Signia, Circei, Cora, Pomentia, Velitrae, Norba, Antium, and Ardea. So like we're up to like maybe like 9 or 10 different areas, which by the time that we're in this 424 period,
right,
also have a Roman population of sorts. So it's not just the city of Rome. It's starting to expand out. They've got a foothold in some different places. Losing something like Fidenae is a problem, not just because of its strategic value, but because of the message it sends to those other areas that they've colonized. You know, well, if one can successfully break away, well, maybe some more could break away as well, because it sets up this kind of buffer zone around Rome itself that gets harder to for an enemy to get close to the city. And so I'm interested in the way that Rome is shifting gradually, slowly in their understanding of themselves. It's not just being about the city, but being about a state that expands beyond that. And they're starting to grow out, and we've been starting to see it for a little while. But that's kind of the lay of the land where we're at the moment.
You know what? I know that that's probably not too bad, but I'm actually surprised it's not more. I guess it's because so many of the wars we've been talking about, they are defensive more than anything, I suppose.
And they're mostly inconclusive. Yeah. It's somebody steals the booty one year, somebody steals back the booty the next year. Yes. It's not like territorial
second-hand
acquisition.
Ass.
Well, you know, I mean, if I have to win something, better that than nothing.
No, thank you. Geography is never my strong point. So I do appreciate it when others provide geographical context for me.
Yeah, look, I'm sorry to say that we don't know where a lot of these are necessarily. I mean, some we do,
look,
but some
we have
don't.
To assume that they're not that far
away. But they can't be that far away, no. Can they? I don't think they're far away.
No.
So I actually think this is probably a good place to wrap up this episode.
Indeed. So we've got tribunes causing issues as they are wont to do.
Look, they really just want the best for the plebs, I think. And, you know, don't we all?
Look, I do. I know I do. And you know what? Sometimes it takes, you know, authority figures getting really angry with you and saying, look, you're not living up to my expectations. Sometimes, you know, it's hard to hear, but you need to hear it.
But also, I believe in you.
Exactly. You and know, you know what?
You can do it, guys.
Yeah, exactly.
Take that power.
You're running for office. It's great. All right, Dr. G. That means that it's time for the partial pick.
We've had a listener complaint about my impression of an eagle, which I apologize. But we'll continue to do anyway.
I don't know how, because I've been cutting you out and putting in the actual sound effect for episodes.
Oh my God.
I know. We haven't had you doing the eagle in a really long time.
I cannot believe that my mastery has been cut out. Well, clearly when I edit the episodes, I leave myself in. So I apologize to everybody. That's my editorial decision.
You can
letting
add that to the partial
down.
Historians bingo game. Is Dr. G's eagle imitation cut out or is it in? Because you can tell who edited the episode.
That will be the giveaway.
Yeah.
Because obviously I'm an artiste and I leave my eagle sound effect in. Thank
Look,
you very
I'm
much.
I'm mindful of the fact that Igor needs his regular income from appearing on our show.
Well.
Yeah. Do you really want to put an eagle out of work? Or whatever type of bird that is we're using, a falcon.
Yeah, it's not an eagle. Apologies on that front as well. All right, the partial pick.
Yeah.
Rome has the possibility of winning 50 golden eagles.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see if they can do it. There's 5 categories out of 10 each.
Yep.
Military clout.
No.
In a year where nothing happened.
Yep. Amazing how they've managed to let that one slip through their fingers.
Yeah, 425, 424. I mean, they're recovering from, like, what appears to be a 10-year-plus war.
Excuses. There's other people apart from the Etruscans to fight.
Well, they're probably tired. All right, so we're 0.
Yep.
I agree. Diplomacy.
Well, okay, there are 2 truces. We've got the very lengthy one with Vey.
Yeah.
Seems entirely undeserved.
And then, that should keep him out of trouble.
Yeah, and then we've got the shorter one with the Aquians, which I feel like the Romans didn't really want to give it in the first place, but they did.
I see.
I don't know what that is. Maybe like a 3?
Well, maybe even a 5.
Murray's way too generous.
Well, hear me out. I mean, I'll give you my rationale, and then you can disagree.
All right.
5, because Vey has been a thorn in the side of Rome for nigh on 10 plus years, as far as our narrative sources are concerned.
Nice, you said nigh on.
And The Aequians are considered one of Rome's fundamental enemies.
Mm.
And they've managed to like tie things up with the Volscii for now. So getting the Aequians on board with the treaty as well is super beneficial, because this means that three of Rome's greatest enemies in this time period are now apparently, technically, locked into a truce of some kind.
Yeah, I believe when I see it. Right. Look, I'll go as high as a 4.
Oh, wow. Thank you for the good time. Wow. All right, 4 it is. Expansion.
No.
Weirtus.
Oh, wait, actually, sorry. Rewind. Diplomacy, the games. Do the games count as diplomacy? Like inviting everyone from the neighborhood area?
I guess it depends on whether you steal their women or not.
They didn't.
Oh.
They were extremely polite. They
well, that puts it up behavior. To 5.
Yeah, okay, 5. 5 it is, yeah.
Yes. Expansion, still
no.
a no.
No, yeah.
That wasn't what we were rewinding
no.
to.
No.
Weirtus.
No. I don't think there's anything...
I mean, if you have to bully the plebs into, like, taking up power, I don't know if that's a weird thing.
That's been happening for ages.
And citizen score.
Okay. Now, whilst the tribunes are very cranky and not pleased with the plebeians, the end result does seem to be plebeians trying to get a senior magistracy that may or may not exist.
Well, I mean, that does sound like a great outcome.
Yeah, but you know, like, okay, if we go with what Liffy says, which I generally do, then...
And I have no choice but to exactly. at this stage.
you're on my ride. So in that case, yeah, I mean, it's not too bad.
Look, it's not, I don't think it's bad at all. We've got no wars.
Yeah.
This all is diplomacy means that everyone gets to stay home.
They got games.
They got games. They're not dying.
No.
And really.
No plague.
Yeah. All anybody wants them to do is to take and seize the power that the law says that they're allowed to have.
Yeah.
And they
are taking them up on that.
So I think it's a great time to be a citizen, really.
Yeah. Okay. So maybe like a 5? Well, I mean, come on. We don't want to go too crazy.
Yeah, they're not having the best time.
Yeah, well, and, you know,
they haven't gotten land realignment, have
yeah,
they?
Yeah, I was going to say, this is all very... They're just running for office. They haven't got it yet. Yeah. So, 5?
5.
Okay, yeah. 5 it is. That means, Dr. G, 10 golden eagles, which, to be honest, I was not anticipating any, because there really wasn't a hell of a lot going on in 425 and 424 BCE.
10 out of 50, though. That's a fail.
Well, yeah. But let's face it, we've had worse years.
We have.
And this was two... Well, actually...
This was 2 years.
It's really bad. that it's
5
2 years.
For each year.
Mm. Yeah.
Oh, well. Well, Rome, you tried.
But they can't all be winners, you know, particularly not in the 5th century BCE.
Well, it has been a very much a pleasure to sit down and chat with you.
Indeed, it has.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of The Partial Historians. Dr. Rad and myself, thank you so much for listening and supporting our work and enjoying this ride through Roman history with us. We'd like to send our special thanks to the following patrons: Roger, Steve, Maria, Anthony, Ryan, Frederick, Graham, Daniel, Jonathan, Mickey, Cara, Hillary, and Lucas. Some of these people started supporting us very recently, some over the course of the last year, and for all of them, we offer our huge thanks. So I don't know if you've noticed, but maybe our microphones have improved recently. That is down to you guys. It really is. So thank you so much, and we'll catch you again soon.